Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. My name is Dave Kubikian.
And I'm Phil Vacchio. Good morning,
hey, Phil.
Dave.
How are you?
I'm doing well today. How about yourself?
I'm good. Hi, John.
Hi, morning, guys. It's the Dave and Phil show.
Hey.
Well, Phil and I are two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm, and we're here every single weekend talking to you about estate planning and elder law. It's a call-in show, and you can call us at 518-476-5900 if you have a question about estate planning or Medicaid planning and trusts, or if you just want to talk to John Gabriel.
Why would you want to do that?
Why wouldn't you not?
Yeah, I got a lot of requests. I don't know about you, John.
Yeah, I answered the phone for you guys.
Well, it's good to see you, Phil.
You too.
Last weekend, you called in.
I did. I couldn't stay away.
You couldn't get away, John.
So I mean,
that's why he's here today.
Yeah. I was on my way in.
Yeah, that's great.
To the Alzheimer's walk and decided to listen
to
you guys.
How was the walk, by the way?
It was good.
Tell us.
It was good. It was a little rainy in the beginning. I think it had a slow start.
Mm-hmm.
But once it got going.
Was there good attendance?
Good attendance.
Good
audience
good
came. Everybody
see.
Was very excited for a good cause.
Great.
The live DJ going. So
live DJ?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a party. It's a party. We're celebrating everyone's efforts.
It's the way to do it. Excellent.
And a terrible disease. So
yeah.
You know, John.
Energy.
Phil was telling me that a couple people came by the table that he had set up to say that they listen.
They did.
Well,
they were
say
listening
hello
that morning.
Say hi to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said, who's, you know, they asked who Phil is, because I guess on the show,
you said
hi to Phil, and yeah. They did, so.
Guys got fans.
We got some listeners.
Yeah, there you
I don't
go.
Know about fans, but. Well, so, speaking of the walks real quick, we might have to say this twice today, but we have a couple walks coming up, and we'd love to see you guys at them, and obviously, the Alzheimer's Association would love the support. Next weekend on the 14th, there are actually two walks going on, John.
Two, okay.
At the same time.
Where are they going to be?
One's at in Queensbury at SUNY Adirondack, that's on Bay Road. And there you will see the lovely Kim Hance.
Oh, good. Okay.
Everybody loves Kim Hance.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Well-known person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't feel like going that far north, you can go to Columbia Green Community College specifically, and that's where there's another walk, and you can see the lovely Jamarie Schaefer.
Hey.
There you
fantastic.
Go.
I hope the weather is good both days.
Come meet the voices.
That day,
I'm getting a little worried because last Saturday it was a little rainy. Today's rainy.
Finally, the autumn weather is here. So,
well, I hope it doesn't stick to Saturday.
It's raining like this. So, I can tell you that Friday we have a 20% chance of rain. That's as far as we can go.
Okay. Well, I feel like a weather forecast for 6 days from now isn't exactly a forecast.
About 15% accurate.
Yeah,
15%. I'll take it. Yeah,
that's the extended forecast. So, anyway, we hope for good weather and everybody come on out.
Well, it's a really good cause, and it's just so important to get people to understand that there's this affliction out there. I think everyone deals with it in their own families.
There really is no cure for, although they continue to work on it.
And there's
that's
some treatments.
Why and we're walking.
Yeah, it's just a widespread disease. I feel like every year, and since I've been practicing, more and more of my clients are having it, and some earlier and earlier.
Sure, yeah, I know, yeah, and it's sad to see.
Well, they say, you know, if you live long enough that, you know, one out of three people will have it. And it's just a question of whether, you know, modern science keeps you going long enough for this other thing.
Probably part of it. People, you know, years ago didn't live as long, so they weren't reaching the point where their mental capacity would start going in that sense. But
yeah,
it's still terrible to see.
Yep.
I was invited by the Alzheimer's Association to do an educational program yesterday. They have something that I think is fantastic. For early onset Alzheimer's patients.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, it's kind of like a support group, but it's an educational program. I think it's about 8 weeks long, right? And they do a different topic each week, and they invited me to speak on, you know, legal and financial type considerations in education yesterday. And fantastic. I think there was about 20 couples there. So,
oh, that's good.
You know, the individual who's diagnosed plus the spouse or a caregiver or helper. And it's a great program, but getting the information out there and how to help those people is really important to me and the firm in general.
Well, you know, the association's been really good to the firm and has had, you know, Jamarie has spoken at them, I've spoken at them. I know you've done a bunch of them. And the purpose of it, John, is to really, you know, like, just because you got a diagnosis doesn't mean, you know, the end is near.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, and that's
so,
right. Yeah.
So the support group really, and it's twofold. It's for the person who's been diagnosed with dementia, mm-hmm. yeah. as well as their caregivers. And I think they divert at some point. So
right.
there's some,
right.
you know, support groups for the caregivers and so on. But at a diagnosis, Phil, it is so darn important to then act. You know, like we talk about
sure. yeah.
someone who comes in who's, you know, a family, a couple in their 60s. It's like, okay, hey, listen, you might want to do a trust at some point. There's this 5-year look back period you want to get in front of, power of attorney, healthcare, you know, all the basics. And, you know, certainly in the future, let us know if there's any bad news or good news where we need to adjust the plan. So, like, if Phil, if you had someone who's a 60-year-old couple and they just want to update their wills.
Yeah.
Right? That's
mm-hmm.
all they want to do.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You're going to do your job to mention, hey, look, there's this world of trusts, wills go through probate, yada, yada, yada. But then you're going to say, all right, happy to do your will. Let us know if anything, if you get a bad diagnosis one day, hey, we got to be one of those phone calls because
yeah.
at that point, the facts are different. Now, yeah. the fact is there's a long-term care diagnosis and it's still not too late to act.
Right.
Sure. Yeah. And that's a common misconception too that I hear somewhat often is a diagnosis means it's too late for me to act. Just because I was diagnosed with Alzheimer's or I was diagnosed with dementia and the doctor has a note saying that, that means I can't sign these papers. I can't do a will anymore. I can't do a power of attorney. I can't do a healthcare proxy. Do you ever hear that, Dave?
Yeah. And I'm like, how'd you get here? And they're like, we drove.
Right. Yeah.
You
well,
drove.
See,
yeah. yeah. And how's next Tuesday to come in? I can't. I'm working. Because you're fine. You just have this
right.
diagnosis.
Yeah.
This long-term
right.
yeah. diagnosis.
And in reality, I mean, the only entity that can declare someone incompetent that they can't sign things is a court, right? So even sometimes when a doctor may think that, oh, this person can't make their own decisions, for us as attorneys, you know, how many times do you have to go into the hospital or to a nursing home to try to sign documents with somebody?
Yeah.
And at that point, their capacity a lot of times is, you know, somewhat in decline.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
but you know, in the legal world, we call it a moment of clarity. So if the individual,
moment of clarity.
When you're with them and you're speaking with them, they're alert, they're aware, they know who they are, who their family is, generally what they have. We can still sign those documents,
mm-hmm.
despite what the doctor note says.
It doesn't make sense, John, because the lowest yeah. level of capacity you need in New York for like transacting is
yeah.
to do a will.
No kidding.
Yeah, you just need to know what you got.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Know who you want to leave it to.
Okay.
And you got a good 5 minutes and then, you know.
Right.
Yeah, if you don't remember 5 minutes later, that's okay. Just while we're doing it, it's a pretty low level, so...
Phil, the reason why the when facts change and there's this diagnosis, the reason why it's so important to get in front of it and to then say, all right, now I really do need to plan. I really do need to consider this trust. And by the way, I think it's more age-related you should do a trust, and it's not about, you know, having been diagnosed with dementia. You should do a trust beforehand because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't mean to be, you know, the bearer of bad news on a rainy day. We're all going to die one day, guys, so let's avoid probate. Right. So there's still really good reasons to do a trust
yeah.
and to specifically do the one that deals with long-term care. If we don't die, we're all going to get older. So, you know, either way, a trust will make sense. But if you got that diagnosis, if your family member has been recently diagnosed with dementia, please talk to them and tell them, go see an elder law attorney about doing a trust, about doing a power of attorney.
Yeah.
And if they say, well, I already did a power of attorney a couple weeks ago. Well, is it one that an elder law attorney did? Does it have powers in there that are going to help our fact pattern in the future?
Yeah, I ask that question all the time. I know you do as well. I would say more than half the time, it doesn't have those powers. And they don't realize that. They think, I have the power of attorney. Whatever happens in the future, I have the authority to now take care of it. And I say, well, hold on. It may be valid, but please let me just review it. And there's a few things I'm looking for, and we know what to look for. And it happened yesterday. I had a consult. I said, sign me the power of attorney. I got it afterwards, and I said, I'm sorry, you don't have the authority to do these things, but let's see if mom can sign a new power of attorney.
Right.
And we headed off. And we, you know, a potential issue was avoided that way.
Is that John, that we have here? Can't read your handwriting, John.
I'm sorry.
It's John?
I'll do better next time. John from Albany.
John from Albany. Yeah. Can you hear us?
Hi,
John.
Hi, good morning.
How are you?
Good. Quick question for you. How would you put a bank account in a revocable trust? And is that money locked in?
So in a revocable trust?
Yes.
So a trust, you're going to be the trustee of your own trust?
Yes.
Well, so that makes it really, really easy, right? So your trust has a name. It's the John from Albany Trust, with John from Albany being the trustee. And you can go to any bank you want, John, and you could say, all right, I need a change of ownership form. And they will say a very basic question, what's the new owner's name? And you're going to provide them with the name of your trust and the tax ID number for your trust. In this case, because it's a revocable trust, that's just your social security number. And just like you would open up any other account at the bank, you can switch over a personal account into a trust account in the name of your revocable trust.
And they should be able to do it there and then. You probably don't even need a form. Just sit down with the representative. Even bring a copy of the trust to be safe. If you're not sure what the name is, usually it's written somewhere on the first page or so. And the bank may want to see it as well, at least a few of the relevant pages, to make sure it's a validly executed trust. But like David said, it's in terms of simplicity, it's almost like opening an account in your own name. Not much different.
Okay. Would you have access to that money anytime?
Well, if it's revocable, then yes. And you're the signatory, you're the trustee of that trust. So whenever you want money out of your own account, you can do it. You can get it. Your own signature as trustee is going to be able to get that money.
Oh, I see. All right, really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Now, one thing to note there, because I had this come up during my Alzheimer's presentation yesterday, is, and many people may know this, but the revocable trust, we have all that access, we have all that control. It's almost as if I own it myself. It doesn't protect assets. And I see that. Do you see that somewhat often when it comes up? People think they have this trust. Myself is protected. We ask them what kind of trust it is, or we look at the trust and we see it's revocable. And we have to tell them, well, you've had this trust in place for 5-10 years, but it's not protecting your assets from those costs of long-term care. And sometimes, like the person I advised yesterday, I said, hey, let's sit down and maybe we should put some of those assets into an irrevocable trust if asset protection is on your mind. And we can still do that, but it's a matter of changing some things around, possibly creating a new trust.
Well, Phil, just like every power of attorney isn't the same, right? And the individual powers that are in a power of attorney really will matter. You had a client where their power of attorney was not up to the standards that we would want for a long-term care fact pattern. Hopefully there's the capacity to do a new one. Trusts are the same way. So it's not like, oh yeah, no, I did a trust. When we're talking about trusts, most of the time we're talking about that form of irrevocable trust, that Medicaid asset protection trust. And the idea, I don't want to talk about toasters and ovens, but I might have to.
Do it. It's your favorite topic.
The reason why John from Albany has a revocable trust, he might put a bank account into his revocable trust. That means that he can walk into the bank tomorrow and remove money, and the only person who's got a sign is him.
Right.
It's like he's got a toaster. He can move his toaster from one room to another. He can take it back to the store and buy a new toaster. Why are we talking about toasters? Because Medicaid cares about your toasters. They care about what money you have accessible based on your own signature and nothing but your own signature. So when Phil does a Medicaid asset protection trust and he uses the word irrevocable, it means you could still get the money, but you just can't get it by yourself.
Yes, there's other steps to take to get to that money. Therefore, the government says it's not totally in your control. In our eyes, it's not yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's in your control because you get to, so instead of a toaster, by the way, everybody, it turns into an oven. And obviously we know ovens are movable. You can move an oven, not by yourself. You're going to get a hernia and it's going to be a big deal, but it is movable.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Just like, if you have a puppet that you have it dangling at the end of the string, you control that puppet, but you kind of need that puppet for a puppet show. So the idea is that when we have that bad diagnosis, it's time to act. I actually think it's time to act before that, just because we turn a certain age. We might want to act on a Medicaid trust. I think we're at the fastest 15-minute break in the history of radio.
Okay. We are there.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog's Estate and Medicaid Planning Show right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Phil, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us in Albany, Clifton Park, or Saratoga offices, call 518-465-7581 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning, and we're back. My name is Dave Kabikian.
And I'm Phil Vacchio.
He's got a great voice, John.
Well, who does?
Phil. I feel left out. You have a great voice. He's got a great voice. Yeah.
See, I think you have a great voice, Dave. Oh. I think you don't like your own voice. I don't think I have a great voice, but...
No, people do that all the time. When they hear their own voice, it's like, oh my God, I sound like that.
If I could meld your voice and Phil's voice together and have that be my voice, I would love it. It's a great voice.
I would take John's voice too. I mean,
yeah, it's well, you know, it's whiskey and cigarettes. No, I'm kidding.
That's what you need, right? I'll start right now.
Whiskey and cigarettes. Please don't try that at home.
No,
guys.
No, do not do that. No.
So in the first half of the show, we did mention these walks coming up, and we're really excited about them. The Alzheimer's walks on the 14th, so next weekend in Queensbury, and then also at Columbia Green. SUNY Adirondack is the Queensbury walk. Columbia Green Community College is the Columbia Green walk. We'd love to see you there. We're going to have tables at all of it. Kim's going to be at one. Jane Marie's going to be at the other. Fantastic. And then the following weekend, the 21st, we'll be at Siena College for the big Albany walk. We'd really love to see you there as well. We also have some in-person seminars coming up.
Very excited. I'm excited about this.
Not webinars.
To get back to in-person seminars.
That's good.
It's very exciting.
Yeah. In-person.
Yeah.
I'm excited because these hotels where we have them at have wonderful chocolate chip cookies, and I am a fiend.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
I'll have to test them out.
Well, we do that. Have them coming up, and Phil, you're going to be doing the first one of them. It's going to be on November 3rd. It's a Friday.
Yes.
It'll be in Clifton Park at the Hampton Inn at 2 p.m.
Oh, great. Easy to get to.
And then if you say, you know what? I want to hear some other voices. On Monday the 6th at 10 a.m. and at 2 p.m., we'll be at the Staybridge Suites right by Colony Center.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
So when you're done listening to us, you can go to Macy's. Buy something nice.
Make it a full day.
Yeah. So one of them will be myself. The other one will be Jane Marie. So it's Friday the 3rd, Monday the 6th. You can go to our website, herzoglaw.com, for more information. You could email us at info@herzoglaw.com. You could call us at the office. I already forgot the number, 518-465-7581. And if you say, enough of that, I want questions answered right now on the radio, you can call us at 518-476-5900. Now, Phil. Right.
Yes, sir.
You did this big EASE, they call them EASE presentations with Alzheimer's Association. I have a question for you. If one of those people at your seminar said, you know what, Phil's right, I got to get my stuff checked out. They call the office, they schedule an appointment with you. How does that work? What kind of information are you going to be looking at when you look through their materials?
So let's walk through that, right? As if we're in a consultation here. So the first thing I'll ask is a little bit about themselves. We send the questionnaire ahead of time, even if people have documents in place, and that gives us a little, you know, snapshot of their situation.
Like their assets.
Yeah, their assets, family. Their names, their family information, all that kind of stuff, which gives me a general background that's very helpful. And in this situation, I always ask, do you have documents in place already?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times that they do, and I'll ask to review those first as well. And I'll look for things that you and I may know that may be issues. You mentioned before the break, power of attorney. In my opinion, one of the most important documents for people to have, and to have a not only properly drafted and executed one that's valid, one that is sufficient for all situations, right? Assuming the client is comfortable. And when I say all situations, I mean situations that you may not be thinking about right now, but that could come up in the future.
So, you know, for everyone out there, a power of attorney is where you name someone to effectively be you. And what Phil's saying is we want whoever you name to be able to be all of you, to be able to pay a bill, for example. But I want them to be able to gift to a trust. I want them to be able to create a trust. I want them to be able to do some of these fantastic maneuvers we do to preserve your income while you're getting home care.
And gift is a scary word to many people, right? Some people think, oh, I'm going to give someone else the power to make gifts for me. And when I say gift, I ask them always, what do you think that means? What is a gift to you? Well, a gift to my kids, a gift for their birthday, a gift for holidays. But a gift, really, from a legal sense, is any kind of uncompensated transfer. So that could include the creation and funding of a trust. And in that world, our world, that's extremely important. And in certain situations, if clients come to us and that power is not in the power of attorney, our ability to assist them with asset protection is going to be much more limited than it would otherwise be if it's not properly drafted and they can't sign a new one anymore.
If your power of attorney doesn't say that your agent can do something for you, then they can't do it for you. And if you're not able to do a new one, if Phil didn't get to you in time, we're going to have to do something like a guardianship. Hold that thought for a second here, Phil. We have Cliff from Canajoharie. By the way, the penmanship by John was fantastic on that one. Thank you, John.
I tried.
Canajoharie is a tough one to write.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Cliff, how are you?
Yeah, good morning, good morning.
What's going on?
Got a couple of questions. Number one, I have some IRAs that I've put away. They're set up as a transfer upon death to my oldest, to my son. Is that inclusive in a form of it's like a trust for, Medicare purposes or not?
So he says a couple of things there, Cliff. So I think you mean for Medicaid purposes, and you mentioned IRA,
Medicaid,
and the IRAs have beneficiaries, effectively.
The IRAs have beneficiaries. My son's a beneficiary, correct.
Okay. So for IRAs, for any qualified retirement accounts, Medicaid does not look at those balances, those accounts, the same as cash or stocks or bonds that are in just your name, okay? They look at retirement as being as exempt as an asset. So sometimes on the radio, we talk about how an applicant could have about 30 grand of resources and still qualify for Medicaid. When we're talking about that number does not include retirement. Retirements are exempt. One day you're going to pass away, that retirement will go to your son because he's your beneficiary on it, and off we go. Now, if you end up needing long-term care, Medicaid will look at the retirement as a future stream of income. They're interested in all those distributions you're entitled to get, and they want you to maximize those distributions from the retirement. So all in all, it's actually really good news for that IRA because the vast majority of it will not go to the government. Okay? So you said a bunch of stuff there where it's great you have an IRA with a beneficiary. We know that thing will avoid probate. Okay? We also know that thing is not going to need to go into a trust because Medicaid does not consider it to be an asset of yours. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. But my next question is, I'm 69 years old, and going forward, I think the federal government says we're mandated to take distributions from our IRAs.
Yep.
After we're 73 or 73 and a half or whatever that figure is.
So hey, Cliff, this is Phil. I'm going to take this one if you don't mind. So it is, it's 72 right now. It's due to increase to, I think, 73 and a half and keep going up from there for a bit. But right now it's 72. And what you're referring to is what's called the RMD, the required minimum distributions. So the IRS, which is a separate branch of the government from Medicaid, has their own rules and they have these life expectancy tables that they use. And they say, well, these accounts were funded with pre-tax money, so that we never got paid our taxes on them. So when you turn a certain age, 72 here, we're going to force you to take out distributions annually in a certain amount, according to our tables, and that is going to count as income for you. That's what you're referring to. So it's turning it into essentially a stream of income for you as well.
So Cliff, down the road, if you do need long-term care, Medicaid will be very interested in that income that you're getting, just like they'll be interested in your Social Security and any pensions you have and any other sources of income. And they're going to want you to spend down that income based on whether you need home care or nursing home care. So, you know, for a lot of people where they have IRAs, and actually Cliff, thanks for the call. When you know, we kind of hang up on you or you hang up on us, I'm going to come back to Phil with retirement. So don't stop listening to the radio, okay?
Should that IRA be put into it? Should that be put into a trust to protect it?
No. And thanks for the call. I'm going to explain why right now, Cliff, okay? So the idea is...
Good rest of the weekend.
You too.
You too.
Yep. Cheers. Thanks.
So if Cliff did a trust, Phil, he is the income beneficiary of that trust.
Correct.
If even we were able to put an individual retirement account, an IRA, into a trust, which we can't, but even if we could, he gets the income from the trust, and the only thing Medicaid cares about from that retirement is the income.
Not the principal.
Even if we could put it in, it doesn't accomplish anything because we want him to get the income from the trust, and Medicaid only wants the income. Now, when you meet with a client, when I look at their questionnaire, the very first thing I look at is what would go into a trust if we did a trust. Normally, it's a house.
Yeah, that's the first thing we look at.
And then the thing is, well, what other monies would go in? And I looked, well, look, if someone's got a $2 million IRA and they just have a house, well, I don't know if I'm putting anything else in besides the house.
Right, likely not in that situation. But there are different situations where there could be accounts or other type of assets to put into the trust. How I explain it to clients is real estate first a lot of times. That changes your life in the least way possible. You're not using real estate often as a liquid asset. Maybe it's a rental property, but like you said, you can still receive income generated by the trust, which you can use to pay any expenses and whatnot on that property. But other accounts, you know, say you have investment accounts, brokerage type accounts that are non-retirement, or you have life insurance policies that have a what we call cash surrender value. These are assets that count as resources for Medicaid. And if you want to protect them, they are good options to put into the trust. And when I tell my clients from a planning perspective, what, because ultimately, right, we guide them, but it's their decision as to exactly what to put into the trust. And I say, when you're making that determination, the thought process should be, well, whatever liquid type accounts I put into the trust, I don't plan on accessing those for myself. In my mind, it's protecting them for my heirs, who, you know, if it's my children, grandchildren, others, whoever it may be. That's the purpose, and it's, to a degree, not locking up those assets completely.
Well, you can,
right?
They are accessible just like an oven is movable.
Correct.
But we don't want, and I think what you're saying, Phil, is you don't want a client to put in an asset that they're planning on taking
it
out in 2 years.
It shouldn't be the plan. There is a way to do it, but that should be only if you have to do it. You're going to leave enough out of the trust to still live your life comfortably. You know, I always like to tell my clients too, and they laugh at this. A lot of our older clients have been spending their whole life. I mean, I'm sorry, saving rather their whole life, not spending. And I say, please, 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 enjoy your money now as well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, spend your money. It's yours. That'll make you happy. If you have good kids, that's going to make them happy as well. Mm-hmm. And but at the same time, let's see what we could protect. And I treat it as a scale. Right, one side of the scale is protecting assets, preserving them, go to the legacy. Other side of the scale, still living my life under my control, how I want to live it. And everyone's balance there is different. And absolutely, I like to have that full conversation to understand the client and what's your balance? What does it look like?
Wow, we got about 30 seconds. Holy moly.
That was good.
I can't believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great explanation, by the way, Phil. I wish we had wish we had at least another 45 seconds to talk about it.
Talk fast.
I could do it. No.
Well, Phil, it's good to see you in person. I'm a little worried that Jamie didn't call in. I feel like maybe she should have, but
yeah, she should have followed my lead from last week. What the heck, Jamie? Come on.
Well, we hope to see you guys at the walks next Saturday, and we'll obviously remind you about them Saturday morning next week.
And our live presentations, keep them on your calendar.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Show with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you would like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581 or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.